Welcome to Category Leaders, where we go inside the minds of executives and innovators shaping the future of B2B growth. I'm Eli Grisserfidi, co-founder of Maya Digital, where we help B2B companies and executives build LinkedIn authority and drive life-changing opportunities. On this podcast, I sit down with founders, CEOs, and C-level leaders who are redefining their categories, the innovators turning executive presence into pipeline growth, competitive advantage, and market leadership. If you are a decision maker looking to scale your influence, attract top talent, and position yourself as the go-to voice in your industry, you are in the right place. Let's dive in. Hello, today on Category Leaders, I am joined by Chat Jogaker. He is the co-founder and CEO of Baton, which is essentially building the Zillow for small businesses. Before this, Chat built multiple $100 million plus businesses inside Google, Spotify, and Zillow. He is now tackling a $10 trillion market, helping small business owners get paid for their life's work. Chat, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. So let's get into it and start here. You spent years building massive businesses inside of some of the biggest tech companies on the planet. You could have kept doing that. I'm sure it was a lot of fun and super interesting. What was the moment you looked at the small business space and said, this is broken and I need to be the one to fix it?
Yeah, it actually started with a conversation with a friend who was looking to buy a small business. And he actually made the offhand comment, I think, to him that what was missing in the space was the Zillow for small business. Because he had an issue where most small business owners don't really understand how much their business is worth. And so it's really hard as a buyer, right? Imagine if you didn't know how much your home was worth, someone could knock on your door and offer you 100K, a million. You would have no conception if that's good or bad. And so the market's kind of blocked. And by him making that comment, it really got my brain turning. And it turned into a little bit of pattern matching of if we could do for the small business acquisition space what Zillow was able to do, you know, Zillow, Trulia, et cetera, in real estate where there isn't information asymmetry, the information isn't gatekept, where everyone understands whether you're the owner, you're a capital provider, or you're a buyer, what a business is worth and what the asset fundamentally should trade for. That unlocks a ton of value for both that owner if they want to sell or they want to finance, for the buyer to be able to move quickly. And so it really just like grew from there, and it felt like a huge opportunity to kind of take, again, to your point, some of my experience at past companies and really, I think, make a huge impact for small businesses in the US and ultimately the world, because it's, you know, half the GDP in most countries in the world and 90 some percent of the employees. And so if you can make an impact there, it's like amazing.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You mentioned it yourself that most small business owners don't know the value and, you know, of their business and what it's actually worth. So can you walk us through how Baton actually solves that for them, right? This is something that used to take thousands of dollars and weeks to turn out. How do you do this for a business owner in minutes, right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is, I think since COVID, a lot more of small business owners' financials are online, be it through QuickBooks or some other online platform. So accountants have moved a lot of their financials to some system. So it makes it really easy, a lot easier than, say, 10 years ago, for us to get a PDF with the P&L, or you can connect your QuickBooks. So that's like the first piece where we get real data. And then because we're doing this at scale and we're doing, you know, thousands of valuations, we're able to build the software to take that data in, get to what are the adjustments, what's the cash flow. And then we have a bunch of data on sales comps and industry multiples. And we're able to take those two things together. I think I always use it's pretty simple math formula. It's A times B equals C, and A being this kind of cash flow metric, which is not your revenue. It is not your profit. It is actually the cash that the business generates Some people choose to pay their salary with it. They're paying interest expenses. It's depreciation. There's like all these other add backs. But you take that, and then we have with these comps, is it a 2.5x cash flow multiple? Is it a 4.5x cash flow multiple? Depending on the business, we have past data that helps us decide that. And then you take, $1 million in adjusted cash flow times 3x cash flow multiple means a business is worth $3 million. And we're really, because we're a marketplace, we are kind of ensuring that we're trying to make a market. So we're not going to give the owner a $5 million valuation if buyers are going to come in and want to pay $3 million, or vice versa. We're not going to lowball and say it's worth $1 million if it's truly worth three. So we're trying to, be a neutral third party. And so that's where the conversation starts, and we bring on quality listings and inventory onto the site, which then is super valuable and interesting to the buy side and the demand side.
Okay, so now I understand that the business owner has a valuation. So once he knows what the business is worth, that's, I find it different between knowing what it's worth and then actually being ready to sell it and let it go. And I think you've mentioned before you call it the silver tsunami. 75% or small businesses are owned by baby boomers and they're heading towards retirement. So what are some of the biggest psychological hurdles or logistical challenges that you see when the time is ready for them to finally hand it over?
Yeah, I think the ultimate thing is the owner needs to be ready, be it they're working on another business and they want to spend more time there. They're getting ready to effectively retire and they want to spend more time with their grandkids or, whatever, or travel the world, et cetera. And I think when they're ready, that is the motivation for them to take action to find the best deals. Like, we are a great platform where they will have a better chance at selling than virtually anywhere else. And so I think fundamentally, first, it starts with their motivation. But a lot of this comes to, most small business owners, this is the first and only time they will sell the asset because maybe they've grown this business for 20, 25 years. And so we are really there every step of the way. I mean, we act as a sell side advisor with a ton of technology, which lets us, be present and not be doing a lot of the busy work. But fundamentally, we're there to help them understand this process. I kind of joke around that sometimes, no one wants to be an expert in divorces, and you hire a divorce lawyer to get you through that challenging thing. And that's effectively what investment bankers or M&A advisors are, because it's the situation that you don't necessarily need to be an expert in, but you really need someone on your side that's done this. And I was looking earlier today, I think we're closing in on like 4,000, offers on businesses over a lifetime. So we're seeing a huge amount of data, and that's all in our database. So we can tell an owner when they get an offer, good offer, low offer, we're going to come back with a reasonable counter. Whereas if I was just a, one man shop doing this, I might see five offers in a year or something, helping supporting customers or clients.
So it's really beyond, just the valuation itself. You're really being that guided advisor to make sure that they get the best deals for both sides, right? For the buyers and the sellers, and that they have all the information that they need. And it's not just a platform to where they can understand it more, but they also do have, the experts in the field to guide them through the right choice.
Yeah, exactly. I think I say a lot internally that the job to be done is successfully completing the transaction. The job to be done is not to send 100 or 1,000 buyers to a seller, because that seller is not equipped generally to then take the next steps and think about the negotiation and what's the right structure for them and the buyer, and what will an SBA loan look like or committed capital look like. All these things that they are an amazing small business owner that has built an amazing HVAC business or a scaffolding business or a restaurant. They are not good at the, and like generally won't have the expertise on how to structure a asset purchase agreement and what to watch out for and some of these things. And so we are really here to provide them that guidance through all the data that we have, but also the humans that are in the loop and available to them all the way.
Humans for now. Who knows? Maybe in the future it'll be robots and you'll have to take them into consideration, right?
And hopefully the robots do all the stuff the humans consider busy work. And we fundamentally think we'll have humans all the time where they build trust Because if you think about this transaction, for many people, it's going to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest asset. And there's a huge emotional component to an owner selling their business. It's effectively like selling a member of the family or a baby. You know, it's like they have grown this from nothing to something that's worth $5 million or $10 million and has 30 employees. You know, it's like that's not something you take lightly. And we really believe that I don't necessarily think for that kind of archetype of business that 100% of it, it's like DoorDash, where you don't need, you know, to ever interface with someone and like an app handles it. Certainly getting the listing live, answering kind of initial buyer outreach, like some of that stuff, you know, we already have agents helping on that front, which actually improves the service because it makes stuff go quicker. Our owners are getting to buyer-seller meetings way quicker than kind of the alternatives. They're having buyer-seller meetings within days of going live. And that's really only possible when you're able to automate a lot of the stuff to where we're not taking 3 weeks to make a confidential information memorandum. The listing is live. Last week, I think we had one business that signed kind of 10, 10:30 maybe in the morning and was live and getting interest from buyers by like four, right? So it's like,
wow.
And owner interview, uploading a bunch of financials, all this kind of stuff, which is on the owner. But our platform enables that to be super quick. And then I think they had a couple of buyer-seller meetings a few days later, right? So it's just like super quick.
Nice. That's awesome. You've said something before, Chet, that I found interesting. You've said that the next generation of entrepreneurs won't start businesses from scratch. Rather, they'll buy businesses that are already working and grow them. That, you know, to some people that are listening, maybe contrarian to how they typically know or are familiar with what entrepreneurship is. Could you unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah. And I think it's a little bit of a throwback to the world before maybe, you know, this big startup economy where, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, the way to control your own destiny was to become a small business owner and open up something and, you know, put your shingle out. And I think when people think about the best way to handle entrepreneurship, most of these businesses, if they've been around for 20 years, they've been through COVID, they've been through several recessions, they have longstanding relationships with customers. And so a lot of that goes to their chance of going out of business, right? I think it's 90% of small businesses are out of business 5 years after they are started. And that's what you're essentially taking on if you are starting something from scratch. Whereas the chance of something going out of business once it's been live for 20 years, obviously there can be many exogenous risks, but I think the challenge is that you're stepping on the shoulders of giants, which I think are the opportunity. And fundamentally, then you can address any other challenges that come in, be it AI, be it technological shifts, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's my take, is that hopefully in 10 or 20 years, when people talk about entrepreneurs, it's people buying existing businesses, rolling up existing businesses, expanding, doing, and that really should be entrepreneurship because that's what the term meant 50 years ago. It doesn't mean you have to raise VC money. It doesn't, you know, there's a lot of businesses that should get built and they don't all require venture capital or for billion-dollar unicorns that can scale. And that's not every business in America, nor should it be. I don't think those are the businesses that make, you know, Main Street. And you, like here in New York, I walk by in my commute kind of every single day.
Okay. Jumping back to what we were talking about before, essentially Baton, you know, is the marketplace where you has said you have the buyers and you have the sellers. So it's a two-sided marketplace. You've built similar marketplaces at your time at Zillow. So you've done this before. Could you share some things that you learned from your time at Zillow about the marketplace dynamics that you're applying directly to Baton?
I think it's a lot about where's the constraint. And it's actually interesting that both in the new construction marketplace at Zillow and at Baton, they are supply constrained marketplaces when we brought the inventory online. I mean, there are obviously a ton of new home builders in the U.S., and there's a ton of small business owners in the US, but there's no clear way and easy way to underwrite and see legibility on that asset. It was really hard back at Zillow to go online and see every new home community. So you're moving from California to North Carolina for a job. You can look and you could see a lot of used homes, and they were on the MLS, right? That was a thing that had been created. There wasn't really an equivalent. And there also, the quality of the data wasn't all that good. You would get weird listings in the MLS that didn't really show the lots that are available, the plans that are available, right? It's actually fundamentally a different asset where you can say, I want lot 37, just facing the pond. And then I want the 3-bedroom house with the deck, or I want the four. You know, it's like you're almost Lego piecing it together. And that's something that we built at Zillow and, went from basically a couple hundred new home builders on Zillow at the time to well over 1,000 within a year because they had an easy way to come on and share and make their inventory legible. And that's kind of the path here, I think, is we believe strongly that if you bring the supply, if there are great businesses, the demand will find us. And that's been true. Like when we have a great listing, we have thousands of people that are looking at it, and we end up with dozens, if not over 20 offers on many of those businesses. And so the demand is looking for the needle in a haystack. So we've been really focused on making the supply the key thing. And I think that's like a lesson that we learned. And it's also that, at Zillow, the consumer is not getting charged for access to the listings, right? It's not this some precious thing that, hey, we have this great search experience, so you have to pay us $10 a month, nor does Airbnb, right? Like they make money by getting you closer to the transaction. And that's kind of how we have felt, where ultimately our kind of revenue model is with the owners, and they're the ones that have the asset to sell. So we only make money on a success fee when we successfully sell, and there's like a nominal retainer, right? But it's like way lower than some traditional M&A advisors. And that's really just to like cover the costs of any other marketing that we're doing.
Nice. As we look to wrap up, Chad, I have a personal question because I think it's something that a lot of founders in our audience are probably thinking about themselves. You started Baton at 49, if I'm not mistaken. You have a wife. We were talking about before, you have three teenagers. You had an amazing career, a comfortable career path. Most people at your stage are looking to reduce risk and not necessarily go all in on a startup, early stage startup, go through that. I worked in venture capital for 2.5 years, so I know what the grind is for founders being on the other end. What gave you the conviction to make that leap? And what would you say to some of the founders that are listening, maybe thinking about the same?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, I've always wanted to be able to control my own destiny, I think. And it becomes harder as you're a senior person in a bigger company, or there's only so much you can control. And the good news is I'm in charge of Baton, and the bad news is I'm in charge of Baton. And so I think if you're open to taking on that challenge and that excites someone, that's a good thing for a founder. And ultimately, the age didn't really matter. I mean, if anything, at least the kids are a bit older so that they're busy with homework when I'm busy working at night. We're all sitting there on laptops doing whichever thing we're supposed to be doing. And yeah, it's been the greatest 4 years of my life because it's just this ability to put into action what I have in some ways been training for those prior 30 years of my career. And I can take a lot of lessons from that past experience and the Zillow experience and Google experience and et cetera. And I think if you want to make a dent and you have like a great idea, right? I think if this was something that wasn't as exciting and a big opportunity, I probably, wouldn't leave all the other stuff to do this. But this is a chance to build a generational type of company that people talk about. Hopefully in 10 years, we're named in the Zillows and the Airbnbs and like these new things that have been created, DoorDash, right, which didn't exist 15 years ago or whatever. Now everyone, it's almost like a verb. And I think this ability to do that and support small business owners and buyers is an incredible opportunity. So it was a bit of the like opportunity as well as this chance to take a crack at it.
That's incredible. Love it. Chat, if people want to check out Baton, whether they're thinking of buying or selling a business, where should they go?
Can go to batonmarket.com or baton.com. We actually will shift the website over to baton.com shortly, but not quite there yet. But yeah, they can come on if you're a buyer or prospective buyer It's free to sign up and check out listings once you sign the NDA. And then if you're an owner interested in one, just seeing how much your business is worth, or two, talking to our team about what a sale process looks like, you can sign up as well.
Awesome. Everybody go check out batonmarket.com or soon to be baton.com. We'll link everything in the show notes. Thank you for listening and thank you for your time and being with us, Chat. See you all again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Category Leaders. If you are a B2B founder, executive, or leader with a story worth sharing, I'd love to have you on the show. Head to categoryleaders.team-maia.com to apply. Found value in this episode? Here's how you can help. Share it, take a screenshot, post it on LinkedIn, or send it to someone who needs to hear this. And if you know a leader who should be featured, tag them. I'd love to connect. Please subscribe to Category Leaders so you don't miss the next conversation. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn or visit team-maia.com to learn more about what we do. Thanks for being here. See you on the next episode.